You're listening to the best of the Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
Amid the noise and waste, and remember what comfort there may be in owning a piece thereof. Avoid quiet and passive persons unless you are in need of sleep. Rotate your tires. Speak glowingly of those greater than yourself, and heed well their advice, even though they be turkeys. Know what to kiss and when. Consider that two wrongs never make a right, but that three do. Wherever possible, put people on hold. Be comforted that in the face of all aridity and disillusionment, and despite the changing fortunes of time, there is always a big future in computer maintenance.
You are a
remember the Pueblo. Strive at all times to bend, fold, spindle, and mutilate. Know yourself. If you need help, call the FBI. Exercise caution in your daily affairs, especially with those persons closest to you. That lemon on your left, for instance. Be assured that a walk through the ocean of most souls would scarcely get your feet wet. Fall not in love, therefore. It will stick to your face. Gracefully surrender the things of youth, birds, clean air, tuna, Taiwan, and let not the sands of time get in your lunch. Hire people with hooks. For a good time, call 606-4311. Ask for Ken. Take heart amid the deepening gloom that your dog is finally getting enough cheese. And reflect that whatever misfortune may be your lot, it could only be worse in Milwaukee. You are a fluke of the universe. You have no right to be here. And whether you can hear it or not, the universe is laughing behind your back. Therefore, make peace with your God, whatever you conceive him to be, hairy thunderer or cosmic muffin. With all its hopes, dreams, promises, and urban renewal, the world continues to deteriorate. Give up.
You are a
You're listening to the best of the Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
It's Tim, you're a full-time listener out there, out there in the BG. What do you got?
Anyway, I wanted to, I think it was you, I heard it a long time ago, but these air check things got me thinking about, have you noticed that in the city of Portland there's like this sick demographic of people that collect, like, these old radio, like, I think there's even a board on the internet where they think, like, best team of all time was 1981 on KYTE, and, I mean, they're just obsessed.
No, it's true. No, you'll. This is a phenomenon. Imus actually talks about this a lot. Imus has done whole long riffs about this. And in the radio world, and the funny part is that most of these people you're talking about aren't in radio, or they were like a board op for like 6 months back in 1982.
Right.
And they seriously, they were like, they'll sit around and they'll like swamp these weird tapes. And it's not even tapes. And I'm not just being carrying the flag for talk radio here, but I'm saying it's one thing if you collect and swap tapes of like old talk radio shows, which are kind of unique by dint of the fact that it's talk radio, that it's different. But you get these people, what is this? It's a tape of Mix 107.5 in Atlanta, and this is an air check from 1994 before they went power urban. And it's like, and they sit around, and it's like, it's like they're Ponce de Leon. It's like they've discovered the fountain of youth. What is this? It's a tape from KUBE, which is a pop station in Seattle, and this is back when they had, you know, they were doing their Mavens of the Midday show. And they just sit and they trade these ridiculous air checks of stations, which are all interchangeable.
And there's these select you that follow like these really bizarre and DJs that you've never heard of before, and they'll follow like their whole career, and
no.
they'll just
insane. I've got a tape following Marty Party all the way when he started in Ellensburg all the way up to his thundering nighttime show on KGON. I'll swap them for any tapes of KYSP from, you know, and it's unbelievable. It's like I don't know, it's like Dungeons and Dragons with an oscilloscope. You know what I mean? All right. The hell was I talking about? No one knows. We'll be back. We'll play this this air check that has Tim with Phil Hendry here in a moment. And then I got some hideous things. Speaking of bad air checks, see, now I'm going to be doing this. And I got an air check of Rick from 1988. All right, be back. Don't go anywhere. It's a Rick Emerson show. It's Hot Talk 1080 KTK. Stay right there. It's more Rose Tattoo.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson, only from Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
All right, 1-800-727-5955. Dancing rules! All right, top five coming up later. Another edition of How Chicks Think with Jolie from the front desk. Betsy's going to be here later. All right, so before we play my embarrassing, hideous past, so this is, we'll play quickly, just the air check of Tim as a DJ getting a call from Phil Hendry, who was working down the hall as a character. Go.
Oh, who is this? How are you doing, Tim? This is John Raymond.
That's
I'm
Phil.
Calling from Fester's Lagoon up here near Ojai, 33. Go straight up. How are you, Timothy? We love you. God, do I love you. God, do I love you. Now, we called from Fester's last week. Remember my friend Orpheus?
Orpheus, yeah.
Yeah, he's laid out completely under the truck now.
You're kidding.
And we opened up a valve on the Freon tank, and it went straight down his throat. And that's a party, Jack. All the way, baby. Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
We have absolutely no men here. Nothing but women.
Whoa.
Oh, God, please don't tell them where we are. Because we've got 15 of them to ourselves.
You're kidding me.
That's absolutely right. And you know what makes me, you know what the thing that comes to my mind? Not much comes to my mind, but when I think,
yeah.
I think of Roy Rogers. I see 15 girls, you know what they say, riders up.
All right.
All right, baby.
Let's play some Ryan.
You got it, baby.
That was 11 years ago. I thought it was 1980. No, that was the rubber grape spot from 1980. The commercial.
If it was in 1980, was it in 1980 or was it 11 years ago?
Well, that was 11 years ago.
Oh,
the commercial was from 1980.
Yeah.
All right. And so that, but I was looking through my, combing through the archives, or that vault that studios are always talking about. Yeah, we found some old footage in the vault. Where's the vault? Is it like the Fortress of Solitude or something? Where's the vault?
It's the world's greatest record library.
Yeah, it's actually just a storage closet, and they were cleaning it out. And
so I'll play. These are some embarrassing things. These are mostly from when I was at Rock 106, Spokane's Rock and Roll Nighttime Authority. And these are just a brief preface before I play these. So here's the thing. These are all from when I was about 18. These are all 10 years ago, probably, 11. These are all when I was 18, 19. I got paid nothing for that. And when I mean nothing, I don't mean a little. I mean literally I did this for free. Because the quality of the spots on the station, not to sound like a prima donna, was like so bad because the salespeople would write the copy, which you never want. Salespeople couldn't write good copy. You put a gun to their heads. So the quality of the commercials was so bad that I offered to just write some copy for free. Not because I'm the funniest guy ever, but just because I'm funnier than the average salesperson. And plus, I was young and hungry, as they say. And so it was a chance to get, and I was only a part-timer. I was only on the station like 3 hours a week, like Saturday night from like midnight to four, you know, or whatever. So so there's a chance to get my voice on the radio station. So I offered to co-write and then co-voice these spots like for free. So bring up Rick Check 15. And this is a spot for a place called All Sport. And it's a place that sells motorcycles and motorcycle equipment. And there's a common theme. I only had one trick. Then, as now, I was a one-trick pony. And all my commercials were basically the same. It was a straight guy, funny guy. Straight guy, funny guy. And that was the only thing I'm capable of doing because I'm just not that talented. But this is me and a guy named Larry doing a commercial for All Sport. I'm the interviewer. I'm rolling.
Hi there. Today we're talking with Mr.
God.
Yes, that is a G. So, Mr. God...
You can call me Hank.
Okay, Hank. Our audience is curious to know, how does the creator of the universe spend his spare time? I mean, what? Curing poverty? Fighting disease?
Well, I have this motorcycle.
What?
Yeah, and it goes really fast, too.
God rides a motorcycle in his spare time?
Sure. Check out the leathers.
Everyone's heading to AllSport for motorcycles and...
This is our sales manager,
sure
a guy named Bruce.
Right the first time. Headed now for a summer
not
tune-up.
The Bruce here. This is Bruce from years ago.
In the Valley. AllSport, your motorcycle parts, accessory, supply, and service store.
Well, what do you think?
Yeah, pretty impressive wheelie there, God.
You should see me do one on the water.
Yeah, so not a lot of time these days for good deeds and stuff, right?
Well, once they see you heal the sick, it's nothing but work, work, work.
I see. Well, folks, do like God does and head to All Sport today.
Okay, get on.
Hey, nice tattoo, God.
Thanks.
See, it's not really that funny, but compared to the Drek that was on the station at the time, that's dead. That's
pretty cute.
Man, that's Orson Welles. That is the Fire Sign Theater compared to what was on the station then. But if you heard that spot, I'll play one more here. All I have is then variations on a theme. And my whole shtick was that there was a straight guy and a funny guy, and then I would put in a bunch of stuff that I knew was offensive because that was like the only trick I knew how to do was to like say stuff that was like, you know, to be a shock jock. That was the only trick I had. So let's play another one here. This is Rick Check 13. And Rick Check 13 isn't shocking, but again, it's the whole thing of, you know, light, dark, and then the stupid Monty Python punchline. So go ahead. This is for a Firestone tire place. Go ahead and play.
Okay,
mean later?
Boy, this commercial had better be good. Okay, boys, one, two, three.
Now listen for the trick ending.
Rolling, 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 while them crops are growing, you keep them tractors rolling, Firestone. Hey, Firestone tires for trucks and tractors, tires like a Firestone radio. 23 degrees for positive traction and long wear, certified fully trained team that will keep you rolling within the field tire service and more. Hey!
That's my commercial?
Well, yeah.
Well, I don't think I have any choice but to shove you into this blender, son.
Firestone Tire Incorporated apologizes for the preceding commercial and asks you to keep pace with productivity by shopping at Firestone anyway. E1409 Sprague and toll-free 800-336-0681. Firestone Tires.
You didn't see that blender thing coming, though. Admit that you did not see that
really
coming.
No, that really came out of nowhere.
See, a sucker gin with the band singing?
Didn't catch the blender at all.
And there comes the blender.
Was it intentionally bad, like crackly, like record?
I took it off an old reel. A reel-to-reel was this tape, Christina.
Thank
was like
you
a
very
big
much,
round.
Redemption.
Yeah. No, that was just the way it came off the tape. It's like Tim's. All Tim's stuff sounds like crap. But see, that's all it was. That was the only trick I had, was to do where there was a funny guy and then a not-so-funny guy. And it was me and this guy, Larry. And it just got so old so quick. We'll play one last one before they do the top five. This is a Rick Check 14. And by this point,
Is there a blender in this one?
No. But by this point, sad. I was doing like 80%. I was writing and or voicing like 80% of the spots on the station because they were too lazy to do it. And mine, while predictable and stale after a while, were still better than anything else. Not because I'm good, but just because the quality of talent was so low. And so this commercial here right here, this was after about 6 months of me writing a bunch of the commercials on the station. This is me, and I think that Larry guy again, and my girlfriend at the time, who was also the receptionist.
Was this the one in
the
white
stretch pants, you dicks? Yes. It's me and the girlfriend in the white stretch pants slash receptionist, and then that guy Larry, I think. This is for a bar called the Blue Dolphin. Go ahead and roll this.
Okay, this is a Blue Dolphin commercial. Take one.
Hey, Rick, and... Rick, wait a second.
Yeah?
They sent me here to make sure you don't offend anybody with this Blue Dolphin commercial.
Don't offend. Okay. Well, okay, can I leave in this part about baby seals?
No.
Well, how about this Jeffrey Dahmer part here?
No.
Can I mention body piercing?
No.
Leprosy?
Rick!
Hey. Head to the Blue Dolphin this week, and we promise you won't be offended by a college night on Wednesdays, the live music Thursday through Saturday, or the road show with Kurt Cartier Friday. The volleyball court and patio are now open, so you can enjoy great beer specials like six Michelob Golden Drafts for only $6 all this week from 4 to 6, and cheap draft beer specials on college night. Just for Kicks plays Thursday through Saturday.
Just for Kicks was their house band.
Just a block southwest of Sprague and Pine.
Mention inflatable dolls.
How about call girls?
No.
Transvestite hookers?
Rick!
It's all at the Blue Dolphin.
Oh, she's piercing. Who is she?
Yeah, that's my girlfriend at the time.
Oh.
So isn't that...
Does it just pain you a little bit to hear her voice?
Isn't that shocking? Isn't that edgy? And isn't that... Aren't I pushing the envelope there?
I think that was probably edgy for Spokane.
Well, and the funny thing is, that's the second version of that commercial, because the first version of the commercial, and this is the other... lame, tired formula that I use that you still hear in commercials now, by the way, because it, like I said, as bad a copywriter as I was, it still gets on because here's the shtick that all the copywriters use, where there's the straight guy and the funny guy, and then there's the bunch of shocking statements followed by whatever, and then in all of those spots, you'll hear the same thing. There's the funny open, and then the middle where you get out all the actual information about come see our Firestone radios, come to the Blue Dolphin just for kicks, plays, and lounge beers for $1.50. And then you do the end where you bring the joke back for a sting at the end. So it's like 30 seconds of joke, 15 seconds of information, and then like another 15 seconds of joke at the end. You bookend it. And it's like the oldest, lamest, tiredest way to put together a commercial. And that's how I did everything. That's how most commercials are still done. But the first version of that commercial, the middle section actually started off with, come down to the Blue Dolphin and we promise that Rick won't be there, which is the way I'd written it. And because they were such fools, that they didn't realize that I was just leveraging all the commercial time on the air to, like, make myself look like I was a big star. They were such idiots that they didn't even see me doing it. Because I was just this moronic, like, conniving 18-year-old DJ. And so I would use all the commercial time just to get my name and voice out. And they, like, it took them forever to realize that I didn't care if the commercials were any good or not. I just wanted the listeners to think that I was this big star on the station. And they were, and so I would, like, leverage their own laziness against them. That they were so unwilling to write their own copy, they would, like, let me just make myself the star of every commercial break every day. So, just dumb. Just stupid. Anyway. But I'm much more talented than that now. All right. Here's your top five.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
And the fact that what made me even think I could sing that Rawhide spot? What was I thinking there? Jesus. It's amazing I ever got a job. And, you know, like Tim, I think, the reason I kept all these commercials is because I viewed these as important to get me another job in the future.
Exactly. If you were good at commercials, you would be the last to be fired.
See, that's exactly why. I was saving all those commercials thinking, these babies are my ticket to a better tomorrow. The hell was I smoking? All right, here's Tim Riley with the top five.
Well, music has never been quite the same since he died, but most of it was bad even when he was still around. Here are the top five songs of the day Frank Zappa died December 4th, 1993. Number five is Doctors from Gangster Leon.
What? Okay. Okay, first of all, it's not Doctors. It's DRS.
Oh.
The song is not Gangster Leon. The song is Gangsta Lean.
By mistake.
Not by Doctors. Okay. I don't know this song.
I honest to God do not remember this song, and it's from the year that I graduated high school.
Yeah, I have nothing.
I really don't remember this.
No, I don't even know what the hell this is. Yeah, this is a horrible song. I don't even remember this. All right.
Number four is Salt and Peppa with Shoop.
This is back when hip-hop was real. This is back when they were representing. This is a great song.
This still holds up.
Salt, Peppa, and Christina, their DJ's name was... Matthew Peterson.
Spinderella.
Spinderella, baby.
If looks could kill you, would be an easy over shotgun bang. What's up with that thing? I want to know. How does it hang? Straight up, wait up, hold up, Mr. Lover. Like Prince said, you're a sexy mother. Well, I like them.
That's
real.
A great song. Number three is Ace of Base, All That She Wants.
Oh, God. Why don't you just go listen to ABBA, you know?
ABBA never had this much, you know, like, techno bassy sound to it.
You know, the thing is, these chicks were hot, though.
Why do you think they were successful?
You know, a song by Ace of Base that was legitimately great, though, was that Beautiful Life. That It's a Beautiful Life. That took it. I'm unashamed of being an ABBA fan, and that could have totally been an ABBA song, that Beautiful Life. All I remember is my friend Brain, who we've talked about before, had a paper route in addition to his radio job. And that should tell you all you need to know about radio, by the way. He had a radio job, and then at night he delivered the Wall Street Journal. And he would drive around in his old beat-up green-ass Monte Carlo, listening to the radio, and he just loved this song. He would only listen to Kiss and this. I mean, literally the band, Kiss and this. Kiss and Ace of Base, that's all he listened to.
Number two is Janet Jackson with Again.
Was this off If?
The album is not If.
It was Janice, yeah.
This is bad, though.
Same album, though, right?
Yeah, she's all soft and all uninteresting. I'm going to quit complaining about Janet Jackson, because my complaints are always the same.
Hold on.
Are you singing along?
Why are you singing along?
Because I know the words.
Well, she was 13.
I was 13
when I was already, well, I was doing those Blue Dolphin commercials when you were when you were 13 listening to this. I was doing those Blue Dolphin, come on down.
What was it, 1993? I was an eighth grader.
Oh, God.
This was one of the years I didn't get fired.
I graduated this year.
I was in eighth grade.
Oh, let's all kill ourselves. Okay.
Number one is Meatloaf, I Do Anything for Love, but
music.
I won't do that.
I love Meatloaf. I really do. Not kitschily, not campily, not in an ironic sense. I love Meatloaf. I don't care what y'all say, this is a great song. Screw anybody that doesn't like Meatloaf. This is great music. You know, hates Meatloaf with a passion. My girlfriend Lara just hates Meatloaf, hates him. She doesn't.
I bet Clive likes Meatloaf.
Oh man, oh totally. She doesn't. Lara doesn't like anything that's over the top or operatic. Like she didn't like Queen either. Because it's too over the top. It's too opera. It's too melodramatic. Which is weird because she likes show tunes. And if you like show tunes, you gotta like Meatloaf. They're the same thing. And she likes Andrew W.K.
Does she like opera?
Not so much, but she likes show tunes. And this is a show tune with a guitar. Just like Andrew W.K. is sort of opera with heavy metal guitars.
Like this could be Jesus Christ Superstar.
Come on.
Played at my eighth grade dances.
Oh, shut up. Just quiet.
This was played at my senior prom.
You know who played this album nonstop? Girl in the white stretch pants. Oh, God. Life sucks. We'll be back with another edition of How Chicks Think. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show.
Live from Portland, only on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
I wonder if the girl in the white stretch pants knew that she would be material for your show for like the rest of your life.
Oh, no, she knew.
She knew?
Because she was material then. And
well, I wouldn't.
We were still dating when I started doing mornings at Rock 106. And that, yeah.
But you didn't call her the girl with the white stretch pants when you were dating her.
Well, no, because at the time I didn't know that was ridiculous. At the time, I thought that everybody wore white stirrup stretch pants.
You had
blinders on. I was just dumb. All right, here's Christina.
Actually, things still pretty clear throughout the city. There's a lot of cars out there, wet roads, headlights are on, but no problems or specific backups to inform you of at the moment. As for the weather today, rainy and mostly cloudy, highs in the upper 40s, and more of the same this evening, possibly also some fog, lows around 37 to 43 degrees. I'm Christina Carlson. That's your commuter update on...
You're listening to the best of the Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
Let's play ball, it's game day. We want strikeouts, base hits, double plays. Take the field, hear the roar of the crowd. Diving catch, a stolen base, a perfect game, a triple play, another play of race. Yes, World Series champs will be. Keep hoping and dreaming, and you will soar with a little faith.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
Oh, wait. Look at that.
Oh.
Phone ringing. This right, I'm almost listening.
So are you ready, Rick?
Yeah, no.
Are you excited?
No, I mean, yeah.
Pre-Ramon?
I'm not ready at all.
Okay.
I don't even know what I'm doing.
Okay, I'm answering it.
Do we have your papers?
I need your papers.
All right, I'm fine. I'm gonna...
Hello, the Rick Emerson Show. Yes, he sure is. May I ask you calling?
Ramon.
Oh, very nice to hear from you. How are you today? Okay, hang on just a
second. It's Dick
Giuliano. Thank you. Actually asked for you, Rick.
Wow. Fantastic, actually.
By name.
All right, there you go. Well, in the pantheon of rock and roll legends, the name the Ramones looms large. Ever look, I'm not going to tell anybody anything they don't know. Anybody who knows me, anybody who's listened to this program, anybody who saw Bigger Than Jesus know that the Ramones had a huge impact, not just on my life, but every whether you know it or not, everybody who has picked up a guitar in the last 30 years has gone through a couple schools of playing before they arrive at whatever their own style is. It used to be that everybody went through the Chuck Berry school of playing. Everybody kind of went through that Eddie Van Halen school of playing for a while. There is a Ramones sound. There is a distinctive sound and style created by, honed by, polished by the Ramones, and their shadow just grows larger with every passing generation. Marky Ramone, of course, was the drummer for the punk rock group The Ramones, and joined on the Road to Ruin album, played on some of the biggest hits, and then rejoined later on in the career all the way through to the end to Adios Amigos. Marky Ramone will be playing at Dante's June 14th. Showtime is 9:30 p.m. and the website is danteslive.com. Touring for his new album, Start of the Century. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Marky Ramone. Marky, hi.
Hello, that was a great intro. How are you?
Can I just tell you this? Normally I try to be a very polished professional. I try to come here and I try to convey information to the people and be a professional serious broadcaster. But as Sarah, my producer here, will tell you, that it really is a matter today of just not sitting behind the microphone going, you're a Ramone! It's so great!
He's just trying to hold back right now.
I'm trying not to sound like a giggling idiot fanboy because, A, you got to get that all the time. I mean, if I was a Ramone, I would stand in front of the mirror all day looking at my driver's license, back at the mirror. It's like looking at, it's like being Hugh Hefner. You just look at me and go, I'm Hugh Hefner.
He actually wrote a song about wanting to be a Ramone as well.
I've actually written songs about wishing to be a Ramone. It is, when
Let me ask you this, just to go way back, and then we'll talk, you know, about what you did with Ramones, and then we'll talk about Start of the Century, which you're going to be coming here to support. And by the way, anybody out there, you got a question from Marky Ramone, it's 503-733-2970. Long story short, how does one become a Ramone? Did the clouds part and, like, the hand of God came down and said, "You shall be known as Marky Ramone"? How did that happen?
Well, Tommy Ramone was a good friend of mine, and he was leaving the band in 77, late 77. He approached because he wanted to produce, so he asked me to join the band, and officially in, I think it was April of 78 or March, I joined the band, and all because of that reason, and I just ended up being with the band for 15 years off and on. So that's how simple it was. We all knew each other because I was with a band called Richard Hell and the Vortoids, who was on the same label as the Ramones, which was Sire Records. So we all kind of knew each other from hanging around CBGB's and another club called Max's Kansas City. So that's how I became a Ramone. I didn't want to change my name to Ramone in the beginning, but then I realized that it flowed better to keep it Marky instead of Mark. My grandmother used to call me Marky, so I figured, okay, then why not? You know, so that's how it started.
And you are, as they say, New York. You were from the neighborhood. You're from Brooklyn.
Oh, right? Yeah. They're from Queens. I'm from Brooklyn. That's about 3 miles away from Brooklyn. Manhattan's about a half a mile away from Brooklyn, and so is Queens. You just go over the bridges, and you're there. And the watering hole was CBGB's for all of us.
Do you think it's, you guys being such a band that is closely identified with New York, and in fact there is now in front of CBGB's, there's, what is it, it's Joey Ramone Way, or Joey Ramone Place. Joey Ramone Place.
We went to the city, everybody here, and they agreed to do it, and that's what it was. They changed the street and put up Joey Ramone Place right next to CBGB's. It's about 100 feet away, CBGB's, from that street.
A couple years back, you put out a DVD. It was called Ramones Raw, and it's a lot of footage of the Ramones all over the world. It's strange because you guys, again, are so closely identified with New York, yet you listen to the Ramones, and maybe a lot of people don't really appreciate this. It is such a... It's such a California sound, almost, in so many ways. It's almost like the Beach Boys sort of put into a blender and just made three times as fast and 10 times as loud. Was that intentional? Was it what you guys listened to that gave it that sound?
When we were kids, we liked the Beach Boys. We liked Jan and Dean. We liked the instrumental surf sound. We liked Phil Spector stuff. We liked the British Invasion. So what we did was we just mixed it up, and that was the omelet that came out, the Ramones. And we obviously, back then, they didn't have big Marshalls. So we sped up the songs a little bit, counted them off, 1, 2, 3, 4, one after another. And that's basically our influence. The Ramones are basically an oldies band that was modernized by electricity and powerful amplifiers. So that's really what we were.
And I don't think a lot of people a lot of people are so familiar with the band in terms of iconography. In other words, even people, they know the black jackets, the white shirt, they know that logo.
Right.
And you go back, and those are just really great, classic. And when I mean classic, I mean they sound like a classic American rock and roll. But as you said, it's louder, and it's faster. And your first album with Ramones was Road to Ruin, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, you look at that album right there, it is staggering when you look through the Ramones discography, and there is, just that album alone, there's I Want to Be Sedated, and Questioningly, and I Just Want to Have Something to Do. Did you guys know when you recorded these albums? Because I think critical and commercial respect, I think, was a little later in coming than it should have been. Did you guys know when you were recording these that this was music that was still going to be having an influence or stand-up? Did you even think about it at the time?
No, we just went in, did the songs. I did about 2 takes on each song. The first song I recorded was I Want to Be Sedated. But no, we had no idea. What was happening at the time was this huge stadium rock with 10-minute guitar solos and, 10-minute drum solos. And what was going on was you would buy an album, and there would only be three songs in each side.
Absolutely.
So that was the problem, and we were pissed off about that because you were losing the essence of rock and roll, and that's what Jerry Lee Lewis was about, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, Elvis Presley, and all those great guys who started it. And it was disappearing because rock was starting to fuse. You had jazz rock, blues rock, the essence was gone. So when the Ramones' first album came out, it's all really what we wanted to do was to do 2-minute songs, relate to a youth, and that was the outcome.
We're talking to Marky Ramone. He's coming to Portland, by the way, on June 14th. New album out called Start of the Century. And when you did you feel a lot of pressure stepping on to that drum stool after Tommy Ramone? Were you nervous about that, or did you feel like, hey man, I can do this? I was born to be a Ramone.
Well, I knew the style already from hanging out at CBGB's and going to the shows. It really was just eighth notes all around, and Tommy, along with Johnny and Dee Dee, created that style. I stepped in and kind of made it a little heavier, a little more fuller. Tommy did a great job, but he wanted to produce, so they needed someone. So what I did was I got a tape of 45 songs, 30 songs of their live show, and 15, I think, for Road to Ruin, or 14. And I had to learn all those songs in 2 weeks, and I had to be ready in 2 weeks to record Road to Ruin. So they had all these shows booked, and I just sat there on a drum pad, headphones, through a cassette deck, and played about 7 hours a day until I got it down. And then we started rehearsing in the studio, and then that was it.
We're talking to Marky Ramone. We're talking about the production techniques, and then, because one of the reasons that, Tommy, when he left the group, it was to take a firmer hand in production, and then you were there for what a lot of people consider a definitive, or at least a landmark album, which is End of the Century, produced by Phil Spector. And tell me a little bit about, because you hear, I mean, let's be blunt about it, you hear so much about how Phil Spector was just crazy. He was a loon, and it's so hard to separate myth from reality. You hear about him waving a gun. They're making people do 500 takes of a song. Was Phil Spector, was he that kind of nutty, or is that hype?
Well, he didn't do that to us. We came from the same neighborhood. He was from Brooklyn in the Bronx, and I was from Brooklyn, and they're from Queens. Kind of all knew our vibe. He's a great friend. Joey loved him. I love him. And Johnny and Dee Dee couldn't deal working with them because he worked slow. The Ramones worked fast. But Joey and I understood that this is a master producer, the best there ever was in America, the most legendary. And, he had guns. He had a license to carry, and he would wave them around. But he would never point them at anybody. And he liked to indulge in drinking, and when he did that, he got a little off, and that was probably the reason. But he was eccentric, and that's what happens. But we did an okay album, and he's still around today. Hopefully, he gets to his justice because of his court case. And I hope that, he's able to do something in the future. But no, a lot of the things that were said about him might have happened with other people, but not with us. I didn't see that. He didn't lock us up in his mansion.
You weren't like Ronnie Spector being kept in a dungeon somewhere in the basement.
We left any time we wanted. He was just having fun. We were just listening to the playbacks of the End of the Century album when we did it. And we were there at 3-4 in the morning. That's really all it was.
What did you think as a guy who, you're in the Ramones, you're there. He's talked about the first song recorded with them was I Want to Be Sedated, which is great, very stripped down, a legendary one-note guitar solo. What did you think the first time you're there in the studio and they're playing back that End of the Century stuff and it's like Do You Remember Rock and Roll Radio? Where it's this huge, monstrous sound. At any point did you think, like, this is not going to, people aren't going to like this, it doesn't sound like the Ramones? Did you guys worry about that?
Well, what we were listening to back was the basic tracks of just the Ramones. That the other overdubs weren't even on yet.
Right.
We heard that later on. Me and Joey were very thrilled because it was basically our wall of sound and Phil's wall of sound. So it was a different album. It was an experiment. It came out good. I appreciate the album a lot more now because of the song selection. There's good songs on there. Did I like it as much as Road to Ruin or Rocket to Russia when it came out? No. But as time goes by, I realize what the intentions were, and it worked out pretty well.
Do you think that there's the documentary, the same name, End of the Century? Do you think that the rest of the band or the individual members have been, you think they've been shown fairly? I mean, I guess we're talking about Johnny here. A lot of that Johnny sort of gets depicted sometimes as being a real hard nose, you know, and a real hard ass about things, and maybe not the easiest guy in the world to get along with. Do you think that that's the media looking for something that wasn't there, or do you think that that's, you know, what was there that kind of tension that kept the band going?
Well, End of the Century basically is one director's point of view. He put in basically the negative side of it, but the Ramones were a lot of fun. We wouldn't have stayed together 22 years. John, it was good that he was like that. Him and Joey didn't talk for 18 years because of a girlfriend. And me and Dee Dee were the best of friends. But he could be hard. He never came off hard to me about it. But he knew them when they were growing up. So who knows what, you know, you're 13, 14 years old, what happened as young teenagers. You could harbor resentments towards each other and never let it go. So that could have, went over or spilt over into the Ramones when they got together, you know. But we were all different individuals.
Yeah.
Joey was the front man, quiet guy, very introverted. Dee Dee was a whirlwind hurricane. I mean, the guy just couldn't sit still. He was a riot. And I was there in the middle all the time trying to keep Joey and Johnny from, you know, killing each other and, you know, just trying to, like, ease the pressure of the animosities that sometimes came along.
We're talking with Marky Ramone. The website, by the way, is danteslive.com. And do you have a website of your own?
Yeah, you can go to Ramones.com and click on to Marky, or you can go to MySpace, Marky Ramone, you know.
And you've got to tell me a little bit about Start of the Century. You're coming to town on that, and this is a two-disc set, and I know there's some originals, there's some classics, there's some covers. Tell me about Start of the Century.
After the Ramones broke up, I had all these songs that I wrote, and I wanted to record them. So I was very impulsive and recorded them on good quality on a 24-track analog equipment. And the record companies that were suggested to me weren't the right companies to distribute this kind of music. So I recorded the albums. There's 30, I think 29 and 30 songs that are recorded in the studio on Start of the Century, and now I own the rights to them. Luckily, I just put them out, and that's the result, that album. And it's two albums on one disc, but it took 8 years to get the rights back. The live show was done in Mexico through a mobile unit, and a lot of Mexican people don't understand English. So I would talk into the mic, and every little thing that I said, they would clap to. If I would have said I had to go to the bathroom,
they would applaud.
They would have applauded and clapped. There was a mic over the audience with a wire that was just hanging in the middle of the Hard Rock and the festivals. So what you get there is just the passion of the Mexican audience. Really, really liking the show, which is we did about 28 songs, but on the disc there's 18 Ramone songs. But in the live show that I will be doing, I'll do about 28 Ramone songs.
Fantastic. The album is called Start of the Century. The website is danteslive.com. You can go to ramones.com. I mean, so much more to say. You're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You were on Don't Worry About Me, which was Joey's posthumous album, which is great.
Thank you.
It is. You know, it's kind of the Ramones world, my friend, and we're just living in it. So
well, I hope to see everybody come out, and I hope to see you there.
I will absolutely be there. The Rick Emerson Show. We are big Ramones fans, all of us here.
And it's the 30th. Also, it's the 30th anniversary of the first album that was released. So I figured it was good to come out and do some songs for everyone, and I enjoy playing them. And you know what it is? They're too good not to be played.
Truer words were never spoken, my friend. Marky Ramone. Marky, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And we will definitely be there on the 14th at Dante's. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right, there you go. Marky Ramone, ladies and gentlemen. Man, can't get any better than that.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
Praise the Lord Jesus, in the name of the Lord. Amen. I'm going to sing Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound. Amazing Grace. I want people to sing with me too. Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound.
Talk 1080 KOTK.
Yes! Oh, yes! Woohoo!
All right, 1-800-737-5955. I'm such a simple creature. It's like a monkey with a cocaine lever. You know, just press that button over and over again, makes me laugh. All right. The hell was I doing? Well, no one knows. 1-800-727-5955 or 503-250 the net. It's time for another edition of Rick Emerson's How Chicks Think.
What a girl wants, what a girl needs, whatever makes me happy sets you free. And I'm thanking you for knowing exactly
what propaganda this song is. Whatever makes
makes me happy sets you free. Arbeit macht frei. All right, let's welcome to the show Jolie from the front desk. All right, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you doing?
I got this thing. This is from Shane. Rick. Oh, by the way, I get people who kind of paradoxically email me to ask me how they ask a question. And if you have a question for Jolie, if you have a question, if you have a question about the female brain and how it works, you can email it to rick@rickemerson.com. Shane emails, Rick, I know this seems really dumb, but when you've got Jolie in there, would you please ask her what the deal with the frigging toilet seat is?
Oh.
I swear to God, I've never seen so many women get so upset over something so frickin' dumb. What is their deal anyway? Shane.
Well, first off, Shane, have you ever gotten up in the middle of the night and went to the bathroom, sat in the big nasty hole and fell in? Probably not.
Okay, clearly we've touched a nerve of some kind.
Yeah, that's a big nerve.
Okay, but see, you have these things. What are they called? Hands, that's right. And with the hand comes the opposable thumb and the ability to move the seat as you need.
Well, there you go. And you should use it and put it down.
What you... Okay.
First off, they're really gross. Toilets are dirty and disgusting. I mean, you put your ass in there, dude.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. Some folks... As Randall McMurphy says, some folks plan to eat out of them. I, myself, plan to whiz in them. So what? So it's dirty.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, like, when you come in the bathroom, girls like, you know, nice, fresh, clean,
it's
scent,
not going to be clean with the
nice,
seat down. The seat,
well,
with the seat
look
down is
clean. And it won't stink. It has that, like, urine nasty smell.
So putting the seat down makes it clean somehow?
It makes it look clean. You know,
it's
like
hidden.
When you shove stuff in the closet just to make the other part
look nice. If it's 2 in the morning,
nice,
what does it matter?
She falls
well,
in.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I...
You're going in a circle here. That's... Okay, if the seat isn't up, you know, we put it up. If the seat isn't down, put it down.
No. See, because I don't want to fall in it and land on the pee stains and the pubes hanging all over the place.
It's not quantum physics. Put the seat down if it's up. Put it down.
No,
yeah, really, if you expect me to go in there and put it up every time when I have to go in and use it, then you should have to put it down every time you need to use it.
Yeah, why should we be the ones
kind of
you
guys are less direct. You guys are not, your aim isn't as good as us.
Exactly.
So it's dirtier.
The toilet
so why
is made,
are you less capable of moving a toilet seat than we are?
Because you're less capable of getting it in the toilet.
You're not having to parallel park. All it is moving a goddamn toilet seat. It's on hinges. There's only so many places it can go.
Down.
Okay, so put it down.
I'm going to start leaving them up at your place
you
every
down.
Time. I like, anytime anything goes on.
At my place?
Just to spite you.
I don't think we're really asking
I'm coming
you
to, over to lift your toilet seats.
It's not like we're asking you to maintain the spinning plates here. If you go in and the seat needs to be down, you know what? Put
well,
it down.
You know, almost, I would say 95% of the time, that's what I do. But, you know, it's a common courtesy.
But you make sure to save enough energy to bitch about it.
Huh?
You make sure to save enough energy to bitch about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Common courtesy. So men don't deserve common courtesy.
Not when they...
I had to bleep the second word there. You can say...
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, I can't...
Jeez, I asked you about the words.
Okay, but... Well, no, that's fine. I'm just saying, you can't... people on the internet heard
good
that
thing
one,
you bleeped it.
All right, but... okay, I'm confused. Uh-huh. Let's just stop here. Let's all get a hold of ourselves.
Make sure you put the seat up before you get a hold of yourself.
Okay, you go into the bathroom, the seat is up.
Uh-huh.
It takes... Let's say it takes a whole second, which it does not. It takes a second, literally. Like a third of that, probably. It takes a third of a second to put the freaking seat down.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Well, I'm telling you, I do it 95% of the time.
Okay, then why do you feel the need to complain? Is, I think, why he's
asking.
Because
it really makes me angry.
Why should it make... You know what?
Because it's dirty.
You know what? You know, apartheid should make you angry. You know what I mean?
Those things make
like
me outraged.
Street crimes. AIDS should make you angry. This is a toilet seat. Just put the goddamn thing down yourself.
It's all about the little things, Rick.
I swear to God, I'm going to be like a monk. I'm just going to go live in an abbey somewhere.
Come on now.
That's another edition of How Chicks, quote, Think.
Fine.
Jolie from the front desk.
The proceeding was a production of the Emerson News Network.